BBC World Service. And now, Witness History. Today we're taking you back to the 1990s and to the Galapagos Islands, where a bitter and at times violent dispute broke out between fishermen and conservationists. The conflict affected the whole community, and it all centred around one thing: sea cucumbers. In 2020, Mike Lanchin spoke to Marco Escarabai and Alan Tai.
It sounds trite to say it, but it was just a fabulous place to work. And the best times were the feeling that I'd get from being alone on an uninhabited island.
I agree that there are pristine areas where we need to look carefully at whether fishing is destroying the ecosystem or not. But we fishermen need to catch fish. That's what we do. That's how we make a living.
Located some 900 kilometres off the coast of Ecuador in South America, the Galapagos Archipelago is made up of a chain of 21 largely uninhabited islands. They were discovered in 1535, and 300 years later, the legendary British naturalist Charles Darwin first set foot on its rugged volcanic terrain.
In the morning of the 17th, we landed on Chatham Island, which, like the others, rises with a tame and rounded outline, interrupted only here and there by scattered hillocks, the remains of former craters. The natural history of this archipelago is very remarkable. It seems to be a little world within itself.
Darwin went on to base his groundbreaking theory of evolution by natural selection on what he'd observed in this little world within itself.
As a specialist working on plants there, I was just amazed by the way that plants had evolved to deal with this harsh landscape. It's just an example of how oceanic tropical islands used to look.
That's British biologist Alan Tai. He arrived in the mid-1990s to head one of the science units at the Charles Darwin Research Station on Santa Cruz, one of the inhabited Galapagos Islands. The population of the Galapagos had risen from about 1,500 in the 1950s to some 15,000 by the 1980s, mainly because of migration from mainland Ecuador.
I'm from a long line of fishermen, three generations of our family. It's in our roots.
That's Marco Escarabai. He's now in his 60s. He spoke to me from his home on the Galapagos Islands. For many years, Marco mainly fished for langosta, the large lobsters abundant in the area, which fetched a good price. But in the mid-1990s, everything changed.
Then a group of people turned up from the Asian countries and began asking about the pepinos. We didn't know it at the time, but we were sitting on a gold mine.
That gold mine were the pepinos del mar, or sea cucumbers, a leathery-skinned, elongated sea animal whose flesh is 50 to 60% protein, making it a type of superfood and also a delicacy in Asian cuisine. The Asian buyers had heard that the Galapagos were home to abundant supplies of one of its few edible varieties.
The fishing community suddenly grew from about 350 to around 1,500 people. Almost everyone on the island got involved: government employees, members of the army, policemen, even the mayors.
And people came from outside the islands too?
Yes, there were Mexicans, Peruvians, Colombians, and also Ecuadorians from the mainland.
There were several elements to it. It wasn't just exploiting the cucumbers themselves, but also setting up camps on the uninhabited islands where the fishermen would dry the sea cucumbers, because it was then shipped out as a dried product. And the fishermen were introducing inadvertently, or deliberately in some cases, plants and animals that shouldn't be on those islands. So pest species, rats, mice.
There were huge profits being made. To give you an idea, a small boat of about 6 to 7 meters with two or three crew could fill about 100 or 120 boxes each day. Each box took about 100 pepinos. So if you're getting 100 to 120 boxes, multiply that by $1 for each pepino, that's about $12,000. That's the sort of money that was being made. So, as I told you, everyone wanted to be a fisherman on the Galapagos.
The government in mainland Ecuador intervened, calling a temporary halt to the pepino fishing season, but to little effect. Some of the fishermen reacted by attacking the Darwin Research Station and even trying to kidnap a giant tortoise in order to press for their case.
Then in 1998, the waters around the island were declared a marine reserve, severely limiting all but small-scale fishing there. A joint committee was formed to set fishing quotas, calendars and so on. But things didn't go well. Marco represented one of the local fishing groups on the committee.
The problem was that on many occasions the Charles Darwin station got stuck on 500,000 pepinos as a quota. But we knew there were many more than that in the sea. So we argued, no, the quota should be much higher, 2 or 3 million. If they'd suggested 1 million, then we'd have been able to negotiate, but they wouldn't move from 500,000.
The fishermen were also unhappy about limits on lobster catches. Since there were now so many more boats in the waters, they wanted the legal quotas raised. In late 2000, they took matters into their own hands.
We heard rumours that the fishermen would blockade the road to block the entrance to the premises of the national park and the research station. That would be the signal that we had to be aware that things could start happening. There was always the chance that the protests could escalate into violence, more serious threats against people, individuals.
And some of those threats did materialise. The home of Juan Cruz, the director of the Charles Darwin Research Station on Isabella Island, was ransacked, forcing him to hide in the mangrove swamps. And for several weeks, the offices where Alan Tai was working on Santa Cruz Island were blockaded, preventing staff from getting in.
We had to take things as they came and try to lower the temperature where we could, and getting the local community on side, because when the fishermen start using these tactics leading towards violence or tending towards violence, then it really turns a large proportion of the local community in Galapagos against them.
But according to fisherman Marco Escarabay, the protests in 2000 only ended when the authorities agreed to a temporary relaxation of the fishing quotas. It was, he says, a victory. But he also admits that there were rifts now appearing within the fishing community itself, especially between the locals and the newcomers. And he says that he, unlike others, always accepted that controls and quotas were necessary and inevitable.
I understand the idea of conservation, and I agree that there are pristine areas where we need to establish whether the fishing is destroying the ecosystem or not. What we always wanted was to agree on how we could carry out our activities, but in the best possible way.
It's actually much better now. There's a zonation plan in place with closed areas and closed seasons for certain fisheries, and everybody seems to be playing along. Of course, it's not perfect. But there's no trigger at the moment equivalent to the sudden gold rush that we had with the sea cucumbers in the 90s. And who knows what would happen if another trigger like that happened.
Marco Escarabay and Alan Tai were talking to Mike Lanchin in 2020 for that edition of the Witness History podcast.